Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones and this is episode 9. In today's episode, I'm going to tell you about how you can treat your dog or cat's diabetes at home with 7 new remedies. You're going to hear about the new story about American-made dog jerky treats that are causing illness in her pet. And then I'm going to answer a listener's question about what he can give his dog for a bad back. Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. Go to iTunes.com and search for Veterinary Secrets. We're also on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets, or go to stitcher.com/podcast/veterinary-secrets. I would sure appreciate it if you'd subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher. Any questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog, or you can send me an email, and that's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Now let's get right into today's episode. How to treat your dog or cat's diabetes at home with these 7 top holistic options. Pet diabetes is increasingly being diagnosed and currently affects more than 1 in 400 cats. Unfortunately, it's very treatable and it doesn't have to shorten your pet's lifespan. In this podcast, we're going to go over the common signs of diabetes along with the various suspected causes. I'm going to review the most common solutions, focusing on some of the lesser known natural solutions that you can use to treat your dog or cat's diabetes at home. Now, most pet owners first suspect that their dog or cat has diabetes as their pet is drinking and urinating much more than normal. This can be accompanied by increased appetite, but also weight loss. Occasionally, there's a noticeable leg weakness or dropping down on the rear legs. Some people notice a very sweet smell to the breath, and if it's not noticed early, your pet can become very ill with a condition called ketoacidosis. This requires immediate veterinary treatment. Diabetes is a result of the pancreas not producing enough insulin to allow the body to utilize blood sugar or glucose. This results in high blood sugar levels, causing the increased drinking and urination. Some pets are genetically at risk of developing diabetes. Pets that are obese typically are on a higher carbohydrate dry dog or cat food, and they're at higher risk. If you suspect that your dog or cat is diabetic, have this confirmed by your veterinarian first. Most pets begin with insulin.
Ask your veterinarian about glycemic
diet. It's a brand of insulin can actually come off the insulin therapy.
It's likely longer acting and often better at regulating difficult to regulate diabetic cats.
The insulin injections themselves can be given at home and at the same time each day. Your veterinarian or their lay staff will show you how to give the injections properly. They're not painful and hardly often even noticed. The proper type of insulin, the dose and frequency of administration needs to be determined by your veterinarian. If your pet is to have a low blood sugar, that's a condition called hypoglycemia, you're going to need to be able to recognize it and respond quickly. This usually happens within an hour after giving the insulin injection. Your pet can appear weak, trembling, dazed, may begin to shake or seizure. And if you suspect this, you immediately need to give a sugar boost. Have corn syrup or maple syrup on hand and give 1 to 2 tablespoons. You can rub it on their gums if they can't swallow it, and then take your dog or cat to your veterinarian immediately. Recent studies have shown that our pets benefit greatly from higher protein, lower carbohydrate diets, especially our cats. These resemble diets that they would have eaten in the wild. Changing to a less than 5% carbohydrate, higher protein canned food is often the single most important change to make. Eliminate the dry kibble and only feed canned in some cases. Some of the commercial diets that fall in this category include wellness chicken or turkey, fancy feast, chunky chicken or chunky turkey, nature's variety organic, and all the raw frozen diets. This can often give your cat the greatest chance to come off insulin therapy, and even with the dogs, often in practice, I was at least able to reduce the level of insulin. One big additional point is that a change to a high protein canned food often means you're going to need to lower insulin doses to avoid hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. So you need to be discussing this with your veterinarian if you're going through a diet change. Some other additional treatments. One, chromium. It's a supplement that helps make cells more receptive to taking up blood glucose or sugar. It may help to lower the dose of insulin. The chromium dose is 25 milligrams per 10 pounds of body weight daily. A diabetes affects the cells or other cells in the body, damaging tissue and organ cells. Antioxidants limit this damage. Two antioxidants you should be aware of include vitamin E and vitamin C. Their doses, the vitamin E dose is 100 international units per 10 pounds twice daily. The vitamin C dose, 100 milligrams per 10 pounds twice daily. They're two common antioxidants I would suggest. One increasingly effective supplement helpful in treating our pets with diabetes is the essential fatty acids. Be it in the form of fish oil, be it in the form of flax oil. It's a source of omega-3 fatty acids, and it may help increase increase insulin sensitivity. Pretty typical dose is one regular strength capsule per 10 pounds of body weight given once daily. The big point to remember here is we're trying to equate it to a dose of 1,000 milligrams of the EFAs per 10 pounds daily. If we're looking at a dog, such as my dog Jesse, if he was to be diabetic, I would be giving him 1 tablespoon of flax oil. So that's 1 tablespoon of flax oil, 40 to 50 pounds of dog body weight daily. If we're looking at our cats, we're looking at a much smaller dose, and preferably I would encourage you to give them, if you've got a cat, to use fish oil. I think there's more bioavailability to give the EFAs if we're looking at fish oil. Regardless of however form of dose you're giving it, just make sure you're trying to get that dose level. Again, it's 1,000 milligrams per 10 pounds of body weight daily. Our next remedy is cinnamon. It's a tasty spice that has been shown to help regulate blood sugar. It's also a potent antioxidant. The active ingredient is called MHCP, which mimics insulin to improve blood sugar regulation. The dose is 1/4 teaspoon per 10 pounds daily. Then I wanted to mention a couple of additional remedies with a bit of a preface. There's a new study which shows that high fructose corn syrup consumption rates go hand in hand with higher prevalence of type 2 diabetes. Research discovered that type 2 diabetes rates are 20% higher in countries where high fructose corn syrup, also known as HFCS, is consumed the most compared to disease rates in countries with low consumption. This research suggests that HFCS can increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, which is one of the most common causes of death in the world today, said co-author Professor Stan Galazak at the University of Oxford. Daily calories, BMI, and total sugar intake was similar no matter where people lived around the world, the researchers found. However, countries with high levels of high fructose corn syrup consumption had significantly higher rates of diabetes. America comes in, surprisingly, number one in consumption. People consume on average 55 pounds of high fructose corn syrup each year. Following the U.S. was Hungary, Slovakia, Canada, Bulgaria, Belgium, Argentina, Korea, Japan, and Mexico. The high consumption countries had a type 2 diabetes prevalence of about 8%. Most populations have an almost insatiable appetite for sweet foods, but regrettably our metabolism has not evolved sufficiently to be able to process the fructose from the high fructose corn syrup in the quantities that some people are consuming it, as was said by the professor in a press release. So there's a couple of two potential new treatments in part as a result of this and what's happening with the increasing incidence of diabetes in our human population. And potentially we can then like parallel these and draw these into our dog and cats. One is more frequent insulin doses. 4 insulin shots per day for a month put diabetes into remission. A new study by Toronto researchers on an experimental way to treat type 2 diabetes showed that it may cause temporary remission of the disease in up to 75% of patients. The experimental treatment involved having non-insulin dependent type 2 diabetics take 4 shots of carefully dosed insulin per day for 1 month. The diabetes, in essence, goes away because their own pancreas can now make enough insulin. So there's an option, more frequent dosing of insulin for our pet. The second new remedy I wanted to discuss was a protein that helps block fat deposition. There's a new treatment focused on called VEGF-B, a protein within the body that affects how fat is transported and stored. Using an antibody or drug known as 2H10, scientists were able to block the signaling of VEGF-B in mice and rats, which subsequently kept fat from accumulating in the wrong areas of the animals, namely their muscles, blood vessels, and hearts. In one experiment, rodents that were bred to develop diabetes were given the antibody before the onset of the disease. As a result, they never did develop type 2 diabetes. In other experiments, regular rats and mice made to develop the disease through obesity caused by a fat-rich diet. After receiving 2H10, however, progression of the disease was halted in reverse. These have yet to be shown in animals, but early success in people is promising. I'd especially focus on increased frequency of insulin for 30 days, and potentially putting the diabetes into remission. Now I wanted to discuss this story published by the VIN News Service. It was published by Ed Lau. In it, they talked about dogs fed jerky-style treats labeled as made in the USA are turning up with a rare kidney disease that has previously just been associated with jerky made in China. A U.S. FDA spokeswoman confirmed Friday that the agency is aware of complaints related to USA-made product. We found some of these products may contain ingredients from outside of the U.S. FDA continues its investigation into these as well as other jerk treats potentially linked to illness. Dr. Erz Giger, director of Metabolic Genetic Screening Lab at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine, said his lab is diagnosed recent cases of acquired Fanconi disease in dogs that ate treats ostensibly that were not made in China or with ingredients from China. Since 2007, the FDA has been receiving complaints of illness in pets, predominantly dogs that are ate jerky treats. The phenomenon became commonly understood as Chinese chicken jerky treat problem because most of the products were chicken-based, made in China. Until recently, virtually all chicken jerky treats for pets were imported from China. The FDA and other investigators have been unable to identify a contaminant in the implicated treats or other reason for illness. The public pressure has led many companies selling treats to either shift or establish manufacturing operations in the U.S. within the past year or two. In February, the FDA reported that the rate of complaints it's receiving involving jerky treats has slowed between May and September, raising hopes that maybe the problem was going to resolve on its own. Whether that trend has continued since then is unclear. The agency has not posted an update on its website. One thing is clear, veterinarians are still seeing cases of jerky-related illness. Dr. Bonnie Werner, an internal medicine specialist at the Animal Emergency Medical Center in Torrance, California, for example, is currently treating a two-year-old Yorkshire Terrier who was recently referred to her by a regular veterinarian. The dog was sick with vomiting and diarrhea for more than a week. According to Werner, tests showed that the dog had impaired kidney function and glycosuria, glucose in the urine, which are signs that point toward acquired Fanconi disease. Werner said that the dog's owners were aware of the link between jerky treats and illness, but thought that products made in the U.S. were safe. As a regular treat, the 5-pound terrier was given Spot Farms all-natural chicken strips, Werner said. The strips are described on the product website as made from antibiotic-free chicken raised on family farms in Kentucky. The website also says that all of the ingredients that we use in our products are certified fit for human consumption because all of the ingredients used in our treats are all-natural. Our treats are free of artificial colors and preservatives. You won't find anything like BHA, BHT, or any other chemical with strange abbreviated name in any of her treats. Werner said that she called the company's customer service line the first day she saw the patient. The representative just kept repeating that the chicken was raised in Kentucky and that all other ingredients are sourced from the U.S. Werner said that in an interview by email, she don't have any information on whether these companies were using ingredients from overseas. A spokesperson from Spot Farms contacted the VIN news service on Friday, and they were unaware of the veterinarian's phone call and the cause of the illness. Julie DeYoung, a member of the media relations staff for the chicken-producing company Purdue Farms, which owns Spot Farms, said in a written statement, "We are deeply saddened to hear of the dog's illness. We do not know the circumstances regarding the dog's illness or whether our treats were a factor. What we do know is that we never received any supposed report of a serious illness since we launched Spot Farms dog treats in 2013. DeYoung noted that the treats are not meant to be fed in large quantities because we don't use any fillers in our chicken strips. Our treats are very high in protein, she wrote. It's always important, especially with smaller dogs, to adhere to the feeding guidelines by dog size printed on the back of each bag. In a follow-up telephone conversation Monday, DeYoung said the company is trying to determine why Werner's call to customer service wasn't forwarded to managers as called for by the company's standard procedure if we receive a call relating to sick. DeYoung added that the company has since spoken with the owner as well as the dog's owner. We're gathering information that will hopefully allow us to evaluate whether or not the treats are the cause of this illness. We're highly motivated to understand what happened here and what role, if anything, our treats played. On Friday, Werner said that she intended to report the case to the FDA, but had not done so yet. She said that the Yorkshire Terrier required IV fluids to bring her kidney function near normal. Her kidneys have not yet repaired themselves, Werner said, adding that the pet's future is uncertain because her owners have reached their financial limit for treatment. Not only are cases continuing to occur in the United States, instances of jerky-associated Fanconi have begun to show up in Europe as well. Geiger, the Metabolic Genetics Lab director at UPenn, said, "We've recently received samples from Europe where we confirmed an acquired Fanconi syndrome and associated to jerky treat consumption and reversal of illness or improvement following withdrawal of the treat." Only 2 years ago, during a talk with clinical pathologists in Berlin, Geiger found that they had not even heard or seen a case. Geiger co-authored a report on the first jerky-related cause of Fanconi in Europe to be recorded in a scientific journal involving a 5-year-old male border terrier, and the case was first published in April 2014 in the Veterinary Record, the journal of the British Veterinary Association. Every day, the dog ate various beef and chicken jerky treats, some of which contained ingredients originating in China. His clinical signs improved 4 weeks after he no longer was given any of the treats. By 19 weeks after he first took ill, the owner reported that the dog was completely normal. As a geneticist, Geiger encountered the first jerky treat issue with his work on a hereditary hereditary Fanconi syndrome. His lab has provided Fanconi screening tests for decades, he said. Historically, Fanconi in dogs was a well-recognized genetic disease in the breed Basenjis. Around 2007, he said the lab began seeing cases of Fanconi-like syndrome in other breeds, mostly small breed dogs and mostly related to jerky treat consumption. Between 2009 and 2012, Giger said his lab identified 400 cases of Fanconi. He said he continues to see new cases weekly, amounting to about 100 a year. Whether American-made treats are less suspect than or equally suspect as Chinese-made treats is impossible to say, Giger said, because labels tend to tell an incomplete story. When you're looking at pet jerky treat products and I've checked shelves at stores, the label doesn't necessarily say where it came from, Giger said. It identifies the company, but not where it was manufactured, where all the ingredients came from. If a marketer claimed a product was made from ingredients that originated solely in the U.S., he said, then one would have to check on that very, very carefully, as manufacturers may have sourced ingredients through third parties. Asked whether jerky inherently might make some dogs sick, Giger thinks not, because he's seen cases in which dogs ate homemade jerky without becoming ill, then became ill when fed commercially manufactured jerkies. He speculated that homemade jerkies would be softer in texture than mass-produced treats, which we said are likely subject to any of the variety of processes, possibly including marination or irradiation. Giger also added that treats associated with illness aren't necessarily identified as jerky, but may contain jerky and may be called sausages or biscuits or something else. In light of the ongoing mystery, Giger suggested the pet owners consider refraining from giving any type of commercial jerky treat to their pet. While some may think that their pets cannot be without jerky treats, I don't consider them as part of a healthy diet or treat, even when labeled as all natural, and thus currently don't recommend them at all. Wow. So clearly, what's the big take-home message there? Just don't feed any jerky treats at all. I mean, it really points towards some other toxin. It seems very unfathomable to know that you could take a relatively healthy cow, butcher that animal, dehydrate that beef, essentially turning that into jerky, and have that harming your dog or cat. It really points towards something else that is then added into those jerky treats in terms of to allow them to be preserved, for instance, and last on a shelf for a long period of time. But in the interim, and not knowing it, what's the easiest answer and what would I advise any of the listeners? Just never feed jerky treats at all, period. Now I got one again to the last part of today's podcast, and that was the question that came from a reader. And that was, you know, what can I do for my dog sore back? What are some of the other options? You know, our dogs or cats, they can't speak, but they really can communicate well with body language. So if you've got a pet that's hunched over, reluctant to move, they might have a back or disc problem. What's the first thing you need to think about? You know, if you've got some serious clinical signs, you know, such as your dog being reluctant to lift their head, yelping when it's picking up, or having their neck turned side to side, paralysis, partial paralysis, loss of bowel or bladder control, I mean, the very first thing is you need to be bringing them into your veterinarian. Some of the causes of back disease, I mean, they vary. It can be from soft tissue injury, but much more serious, such as serious disc prolapse, trauma, infection. And I can think of this, I mean, many of our really long, long-backed breeds, you know, such as little Daxi, very prone to that. These really super active dogs, such as border collies. An intervertebral disc prolapse can lead to signs of severe nerve damage, you know, such as folding, the toes folding under the foot, the wobbly walking, or the inability to walk, the paralysis. So as I said earlier, first big point, you don't want to wait. You see any of these serious signs, you see your veterinarian immediately. But if you're more looking sort of these, sort of, my dog's slightly uncomfortable, he seems to get up when he's stiff, he doesn't sort of like moving his back to the side, but everything else is working okay, he's still able to walk, he still eats and drinks, then you may be dealing with a dog, something like my dog, Jesse, where he actually has a type of back disease called spondylosis, where he's got part of the bone fusing to the bone, leading to these repeated bouts of back discomfort. So how do I treat him, and how are some other holistic options that you can consider treating your dog or cat, your dog in particular, besides just giving sort of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories? I'll give you three ones here to consider. One, you can consider using cold and heat as a compress. The type of compress depends upon the injury. For a sudden injury accompanied by inflammation, ice is helpful. Apply a block of frozen ice wrapped in a cowl for 15 minutes, 2 to 3 times a day for 2 days. Some clients find that using frozen ice and a popsicle stick works well, or the synthetic bags for people. When the injury is more long-term, then applying heat is more appropriate. Wrap a hot water bottle in a towel and apply it 2 to 3 times a day for 15 minutes to the affected area. Ginger extract may help with joint and muscle pain because it contains certain chemicals, phytochemicals, which help stop inflammation. Few side effects have been linked to ginger when taken in small doses. Fresh pressed ginger works well steeped in boiling water as tea or grated in a vegetable juice. And lastly, the muscle relaxants. They can greatly help both conventional and natural. I'm going to mention two of you to give you two different options here. In practice, I often advise clients to use Robaxin. That's called methocarbamol. It's the over-the-counter muscle relaxant used for people. The dose being 15 to 20 milligrams per kilo three times a day. Now, that would mean a 45-pound dog, such as my dog Jesse, weighs 20 kilos, could take one 500 milligram tablet every 8 hours. A holistic option is to use valerian. It's a herb, which also helps muscle spasms. The valerian dose of the tincture is 0.1 mil per 10 pounds given twice daily. And that comes to the end of today's podcast. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for those of you who submitted questions and just in general for being supportive. If you have yet to subscribe to the podcast, I encourage you to do so. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog, veterinarysecrets.com/blog, or send me an email. That's podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. This is Dr. Andrew Jones, and I'll talk to you again next week.